Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. It is one of the things that mark the times, this great awakening, where something that you thought was solid turns out to be castles made of sand. This awakening is hitting every ideological group all over the planet. The irony is that it seems that the more each group feels they are safe, the sooner that this transformative wave hits their so-called safe haven. What is each camp being asked to wrestle with? There is certainly a high road to shoot for, but that does not mean there is not uncomfortable truths or difficulties navigating the culture war. Far from it. I've spoken about this many times before, but I think it bears repeating. The times are requiring a lightness and nimbleness that we have not been accustomed to. To be heavy with righteousness or ego or anger will not serve us. For example, many people said foolish things over the pandemic, present company included. Some were sure that the jabs were going to save us, and they were wrong, obviously. We don't need to rub their noses in it as long as they're honest and not trying to save face, saying they never said those things. You did. We saved all the old tweets and posts and text messages, so let's move on. I believe that as fast as things seem to be moving now, my sense is that something even more accelerated is just on the horizon. And I'm not talking about a horizon of years, but a horizon of weeks and a few months. We all have some hunches and instincts and inner knowing about what that might mean. But if the Great Awakening has taught us anything, it's that God does indeed work and move in mysterious ways. I am personally filled with gratitude for being on this journey with you. In all my wildest dreams, I never thought I would be gathering my thoughts each week with a microphone, now two microphones with the American Pulse, and checking in with all of you. There will be many revelations and ahas in the coming days, and my hope and prayer for you and your loved ones is that they are at a speed that you can integrate and make sense of. We will be here on Base Camp looking for the common ground, the truth, and the uplifting, inspiring narrative that will take us to our shared bright future. Thank you, Base Campers, and I wish you Godspeed and alignment. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Jennifer Gilardi. Jennifer is a writer and content producer in the area of health and wellness. Her work has been featured in such publications as the Epoch Times, the Federalist, the New York Sun, and Blaze Media. She also serves as the daily politics and culture writer on 945.com. Here is my interview with Jennifer Gilardi. Okay, I am here with Jennifer Gilardi. American writer, walk away from the left, Jennifer Gilardi. Jennifer, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show. Okay, I am here with Jennifer Gilardi, American writer, walk away from the left, Jennifer Gilardi. Jennifer, welcome to the American Pulse. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Tony. I'm excited to speak with you today.
Yeah, you know, I saw your work. You're writing actually through the Federalist, and then I clicked on your website. You're writing about lots of things that people are talking about. You've got a really unique voice, which I appreciate. We're going to get into all that. I saw your description calling yourself a conservative hippie, and I really resonate with that as somebody that used to be a liberal, a Kennedy liberal. You know, I was exposed to all kinds of things in health and yoga and chakras and, you know, all that stuff that I've still retained. I didn't throw away all of my learning from the left, right? And so I kind of consider myself kind of a conservative hippie too. I don't know if I've ever seen that label before, but when I saw it on your website, I was like, yeah, that's really great. So welcome. And is there anything you want to say about being a conservative hippie to start off with?
Well, I do want to give credit where credit is due. Someone actually brought it to my attention after I kind of claimed that moniker, conservative hippie, but Rod Dreher, who's an amazing writer, author, wrote a whole book on us called Crunchy Cons.
Ah.
And I didn't know that until a professor of mine pointed it out to me in grad school a few years ago. But he wrote a whole book on it. And he says that, you know, CrunchyCon sometimes align more with people or what people traditionally think of on the left than they do the right. Because for the longest time, Reagan supported big business and whatever it took to keep the economy running and prosperous without acknowledging some of the other factors that make for a good life, that it's not just wealth, you know. And I think I grew up conservative. I went to LA in 1998. I kind of got sucked into that lifestyle. Like you said, there's many things that were damaging, but there are also many things I take with me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of returned to the what we call on the conservative movement, first principles, foundational morals, and made my own, you know, decided for myself who I was. And I'm definitely conservative, but politically, I would say I'm probably more independent. I wasn't very politically active in my years at LA. I got very involved in yoga and eventually a yoga cult. But coming out of that and seeing the mind games that were played on me and coming back to the conservative movement, I became much healthier mentally, much more stable, and kind of just did my own version of what I thought would bring the most health and happiness to myself. And yeah, and I love to share that story and I love to share what I've learned. And if it resonates with people, great. If not, I push no one. Yeah. And I'm not trying to convert anybody to anything.
That's great.
But I will argue ideas.
Yeah.
I will definitely argue ideas. And I enjoy doing that.
Well, you wrote a great article for the Epoch Times or Epic Times. People say it both ways. It doesn't matter to me. Titled Why I Left the Left. And you know, I have done a number of shows on Basecamp about walkaways from the left because I feel like they have a really unique perspective. Why did you leave the left? Why did you suddenly find yourself, if not a conservative? You said you grew up conservative, that maybe you had identified as a California liberal or left-leaning independent or whatever, but why do you feel like, what were the reasons for maybe leaving the liberal camp, let's say?
Yeah, and I want to be clear, like I never really identified myself as progressive. I think people don't even understand the paradigm in which they are brought into or they've adopted. I actually don't think they understand the roots of Marxism and progressivism, and they haven't read the books. They actually could not even tell you what Marxism is about and how they use language to deceive and to restructure society and government. All that to say is I don't know that I wasn't particularly like, yay, I'm a liberal and I'm a progressive. Like most liberal progressives, I just thought I was doing the right thing and I was a good person. I just wanted to be known as a good person. I wanted to be seen as a champion for the underdogs and helping people. I was a yoga instructor, for crying out loud, and a fitness instructor. So I was a good person. I helped people, right? And then COVID happened.
Yep.
And, you know, I was knee deep, nose deep into this health and wellness business. And I saw so many people that we were always talking about how yoga was supposed to bring us out of fear and lead us into love. And how yoga was like ultimate freedom, yoking to the divine and all these things. And I saw all of these yoga people, I'd say a good 90% of them. There were a handful of, again, kind of OG hippies that live in Topanga Canyon where I was at the time that were like, F you, we're going hiking. We're going to the beach. But it was weird to me. And I had just kind of been slowly coming out of what I call my spiritual cave that I had been in for a decade. I had followed one teacher for about 8 years. And I don't know, something started to be like, okay, I need to get back in the real world. I was always working, but it's like, I want to go to the bar. I want to have drinks with friends. I want to be involved. Like, I don't want to live in this isolated spiritual bubble of trips to India all the time and like constantly seeking what's wrong with me and how do I fix myself and self-help. I don't know, something just started to shift. And I started coming out of that and really enjoying life. And then COVID hit. And I was like, oh, hell no. Hell no. I am just like starting to have fun. And then COVID hit and we got locked down. And so, you know, selfishly, I was a little ticked off because I had just spent kind of almost a decade in isolating myself from the world in a way. And life. And so, and then I saw just kind of mass psychosis happening. And I think logic just kicked in. I don't know what it was, but I think when I remember watching people panic for toilet paper, and I was like, what? This is not even a disease that causes like diarrhea.
Yeah.
I mean, you think you're never going to get toilet paper again?
I know.
It was just very bizarre. I also had a really, really good friend who was in a, like I say, I was in a yoga cult. Yoga cults have their own little specific niche, but he was in one of these broad-based, full-on Scientology type cults that had come out of it and has actually made part of his career helping people, mostly families with children in cults, to support them and trying to help people out of it. And so I was lucky to have him as a friend and as a resource. And what we both saw was cult-like behavior of the masks, of the shaming, I mean, I think what really killed me was allowing people to die alone.
I know.
And for somebody, for people that were so into like this spiritual, right, that death is just another birth process, the reincarnation, the like, it's peaceful, to watch all these people freak out about death, right? Particularly when it was just a very small percentage of people and a very specific
cohort. They didn't let grandkids see their grandparents in the nursing homes. It's like, what are you doing? Like this, you know? Yeah. And to your point earlier too, up in I'm in Seattle. So we have the same culture as California, really yoga wise, the yoga people, by and
they
large,
were the worst.
They were Nazis.
They were the worst.
Nazis about the masks, Nazis about the jab. I was like, I thought you people were for health. I don't want to take this. And they're like, you're going to kill everybody by not taking this. I'm like, I don't want to take it. What happened to my body, my choice, yoga people? Like, you know, and they were just full on, drank the Kool-Aid. Like, and to your point, you know, we have OGs like Janelle Hartman here, who was like, oh, hell no, I'm going hiking. I'm not doing that. I'm not wearing it. But by and large, the yoga people, they were leading the charge. As you know, we must go along with everything they tell us. It was it was shocking to me.
And their whole love, peace, unicorns went right out the window. Right out the window. All the tolerance for people and care and compassion out the window. And that's really what I saw. I was like, oh, wow, I really wasn't a cult. And so that happened. So I started questioning, and obviously, like I said, I was living in Topanga Canyon. So I did have like long walks to take through the canyon. And I started listening to like going down the slippery slope of Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson and these ideals that were instilled in me at a very young age that I rebelled against because my parents never gave me an understanding of why, or a religious framework to understand why I was being disciplined or why they were so strict or why I was so conservative. And so I think I had to rebel against that. And I said, I don't want to grow up like this. I'm going to be free, right? I'm going to be no constraints. I want to live without rules. I went to LA and then I moved to New York and then I moved to Austin. Then I went traveling for 6 months. I went to India and Sri Lanka. I did all the trips and it was really like what they called, like I said in the article, like a free spirit. Like, I don't want to be married with kids and tied down with a Range Rover and all those kind of like materialistic trappings of life.
Yeah.
But then what would happen is I would go off to Bali and I would go to these retreats and I'm like, I'm not any happier. I'm not happy. Like, this isn't making me happy. And I was always by myself on these things, on these like awesome adventures. And of course I learned great lessons traveling solo my whole life. But it didn't bring me joy. It didn't bring me contentment. There was always like more to seek, right? I was a seeker.
Yep.
And so that's kind of the general framework. And then, like I said, COVID hit. And then there was a very specific instance that I will never forget. I was in an acting class because I lived in LA and, you know, that's what you do. And during COVID, we went online. And our class happened to be the day after the George Floyd riots. Or George, the killing. I won't say murder. The George Floyd killing. Or even, I don't know if killing is the right word. But regardless, we had this online meeting and it was a lot of self-flagellation of my fellow cohorts in the acting class. And like, I just really need to look at my whiteness. And I was like, yeah. I was kind of participating. But in the back of my mind, I was like, I don't know. Like, again, these kinds of resurrections of my values started to bubble up. Like my logic started to come kick into gear during COVID, like the things I was brought up with, right? The things I dismissed for so long. And I'm like going along and I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, okay, I get it. And people laugh at me because I was really politically naive at the time. I had no clue what was going on politically. Like COVID really brought me back into it, but this was still fairly, like when the George Floyd thing happened, it was just May, right? We were only 2 months into COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so later that day or evening or the next day after our acting class, I saw a video of Candace Owens. Shout out to Candace Owens. She was
love Candace.
The knocks on the head for me, like wake up. And I had no clue who she was. Not a clue. I don't know how popular she was at the time. I guess this was 2020, spring of 2020. I don't think she was on Daily Wire yet for sure, but she had done this, you know, Facebook video and she's like, I get it. This is a terrible tragedy. He should have never have died like this. I think even at that time, she was saying he was killed by the cop. Like that was the prevailing narrative. She said, but why are we making this man a martyr?
Mm-hmm.
He was a drug addict. He was a drug dealer. He put a gun to a pregnant woman's belly and robbed her. And I was like, huh, sister's got a point.
Yep.
Right. So I'm open, you know, just like the open mind that liberals are supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I send the video out to my acting class, not like I said, completely clueless of politics at this time.
They piled on you, right?
Oh my gosh. People laughed at me when they're like, you did what? I was like, yeah. Like, wouldn't everybody see the logic in this? Like, I don't know. And it just crickets, nothing. Except this one woman who, you know, what we now know a lot of the liberals to be, which are elitists, you know, she's got a home and second home in Ojai, lives in Venice, you know, luxury, I think holds the luxury beliefs, what we call luxury beliefs. And she sends me an email back that says, Jennifer, thank you for sending this. Of course, I'm injecting my own voice, intonation, and how I think she would say it. But this is how I'm acting this out a little bit.
Yeah.
Jennifer, thank you for sending this. This is an interesting perspective from an obviously intelligent young Black woman. I'm like, oh, good. I'm not like crazy. Okay. Not kidding you. Not even a half an hour later, I get like an all caps message. Jennifer, this is Candace Owens. She's on Fox News. I can't believe you would say, I'm like, huh? Because 30 minutes ago, she was an intelligent young Black woman, and now she's the devil. Oh, I get it. And that was really like, I'm like, oh, she just had the same beliefs you do. So now she's a demon.
Yeah.
And that really, I was really caused me to question who I was keeping company with, what their beliefs were, why I believed the way I believed. Again, I think that I've always been that annoying kid that's like, but why am I being punished? But why? This doesn't make sense. Why?
Yeah.
And in a way, that's probably what saved me. And so I slowly started bringing myself out of this pit. I also got fired from my teaching job of 18 years for a company I gave my heart and soul to. that I loved because I wasn't wearing a mask properly. And, you know, so it all started to unravel. At the same time, I decided to return to grad school to get a master's in public policy at Pepperdine University, which is a degree founded in, I don't know if your listeners will know, if you know what they call a great books program, but the great books of Western civilization. So Aristotle, looking at the different philosophies of Rousseau, de Tocqueville, reading the founding documents before the Declaration of Independence. So the charters, the covenants, the compacts that made this country what it is, with a strong foundation in Christianity. At the same time, this is another long story that I will skip. Maybe save it for another day. I was being reintroduced to Christ. I was baptized Greek Orthodox, but not raised with the faith. And I now see my whole life was seeking to return to him. You know, baptism is like you are now Christ's, you know. So I was 6 months old when that happened, and I was promised to Christ then. And I think my entire life up until I returned to the Greek Orthodox Church a little over 2 years ago was just a journey to go back, to go home.
That's interesting. My wife just got baptized for the first time just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's really great. You know, I want to shift a little bit. Like, why? I saw a graphic that said here, if women voted for only women, that overwhelmingly Kamala Harris would have been president, right? And so why are women so drawn to leftist beliefs? And because to me, just looking at Kamala Harris, she was not a very she wasn't a very good candidate for the left at all. And she was propped up by media who refused to, you know, air her rants. I think there was a lot of videos of stuff that was off camera, and she just wasn't handling herself like a president at all that I could see. And I thought, well, no, a lot of women are going to see this and go, no, no, no. They may not vote for President Trump, but I don't think they're going to want to cast the vote for her. But turns out, no, there was a lot of loyalty towards the Democrat Party from women in particular. And so why do you think women just like reflexively, or maybe just, I always vote Democrat, I don't want to be bothered with any of the issues that they're talking about, I'm just gonna, you know, is it all Trump derangement syndrome from women, or is it, you know, what's your take on why there's not more women independent, centrist, or even conservatives right now?
Well, I think it's multifactorial. I think there's a lot of different things that go into women's decision on who they vote for. But one of it is just human nature. You know, for as much as people whine about gender being a social construct, I think we've seen that there are just some things that are inherently feminine traits and that predispose us to liberal or progressive values. One of those is compassion, love. We are the nurturing force of the world. We give birth. You know, we want to be kind. I think we are a little more concerned about how we look to others, right? These are all well-studied facts.
But is the Democrat Party, is it really those traits? That's a question.
No,
it's like,
are they
really the party of compassion at this point? You know, so yeah.
But that's why I said that in my piece in the Federalist. Like, progressives don't actually seem to be very interested in progress. What they are interested is in reshaping a culture that they think is this this ideal, that they use words such as equity. And that leads to one of the biggest things, I think, is feminism. I mean, feminism has destroyed women. There's a wonderful wonderful book that really shaped some of my thinking. And it's, I don't know if you know who Louise Perry is. She wrote a book called The Case Against the Sexual Revolution. And when you start to divorce sex from family and marriage, this is why Western civilization has made leaps and bounds over other types of civilization, because the family is the fundamental unit of a strong society. And when you start to disassociate sex from commitment and family and say, oh, you could just have sex with anybody, right? What it does is, let me go back. What sex used to be, what marriage used to be, is when people were courting or dating, right? Women would be like, you better get a job. You better, for men, you better be somebody that's worthy of being a father. So you need to grow up, be responsible, provide, and then maybe I'll have sex with you, right?
Yep.
Now women are like, well, I can, if men get to do that without any ramifications, right? Because they don't have to give birth. That's their, you know, they're like, well, you don't have to go through this torturous process. First of all, they're now kind of characterizing childbirth as a burden and children as a burden, right? Mm-hmm. As yep. opposed to a gift.
Yep.
And this is a lot of the brainwashing I got into. So I know it well, right? Like, oh God, why could you have children? You know, even now you see the memes of like, they're highly sarcastic, but if it's a woman like crying because they don't have children with like wiping their tears with dollar bills.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Insinuating like why, oh, I have all this money for myself. And like, it's such a materialistic, egocentric. That's the thing with these things. They don't see it, but it's extremely narcissistic.
It is.
Way to live. But so feminism kind of divorced sex from these commitments. And then men are like, well, great. I don't actually have to do much anymore. Right. And so men stopped being men, women stopped being women. And we're seeing the ramifications of that, right? Single parent households, fatherless children, mothers who now have to work and provide and do everything. This is, they've pitted men against women and seeing them as a necessary union for a good society. Mm-hmm. It's not one against the other. And that's the thing with progressivism. And this is what has brainwashed women. It's constantly a power struggle, right? It's a yeah. society based on a power dynamic. It's so funny. Like, as I say, this is because the left preaches the exact opposite, right? They're like union, especially in the cults I was in, because it was all about Tantra and the union of the divine, whatever. I'm like, you're so full of crap because all you want to talk about is the goddess and the goddess and the goddess energy and he doesn't deserve you and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Instead of a true union of man and woman and realizing that they each contribute something different to society. I am sorry, who is going to build the roads and the buildings and the bridges? You want to go out there? It's all about equality and equity until you're asked to do something that really only a man will do.
Yeah.
And, you know,
go ahead. Sorry.
No,
that's great.
Because I was so indoctrinated into this, like, don't you, you're a goddess. And I was like, oh my gosh. First of all, get off your effing high horses, women. Some of you are not goddesses. You don't take care of yourselves. You're fat and you're lazy and you're narcissistic.
Yep.
But it was like this, and I realized the right? Of course, I can't believe I didn't raise this word yet, but the patriarchy, right? You're being oppressed. And I wrote this in one of my pieces, I think in the Why I Left the Left piece, is that when I actually sat down and got out of my emotional hysteria and everything that I had been brainwashed into about the patriarchy, I looked back on my life and I realized not one thing they told me was true.
Mm-hmm.
I've always worked for men. They've always treated me with respect. Mm-hmm. They've always given me an opportunity to thrive. You know who didn't? Women.
Yeah.
And every kind of friendship I realized I had with women was over trauma bonding, they call it. Right, over our shared grievances, over our pain, which just keeps you in it and it keeps you a victim.
Yeah.
And so that's the long way to say of like through my own story, trying to tell you how women get sucked into this because it keeps them a victim mentality and gives them something constantly to fight for. I'm like, it's over. You don't need to fight. Are there misogynists out there? Sure. But there are more women in medical school. There are more women teachers. And there are probably more women in positions where they shouldn't be, but they're there because of the glass. You broke the glass ceiling, and it'll never be enough for them. for liberals. It will never be enough.
You know where I got brainwashed a lot of ways when I was on the left. You know, I grew up conservative in a working class town, and then I went to university, and then, you know, I dated, you know, young women that were liberals and all that. Is the abortion thing, you know, I didn't really think about it. Like, I had conservative Christian friends that were like, oh no, I'm pro-life, that is not right. But a lot of my inner circle, including who I was romantically linked with in those years, were very pro-choice. So I just adopted, I kind of was like, well, it's important to the women that they have choice on abortion. I didn't really analyze it from an ethic, none of that. I was just like, well, if it's important to the women, then it's important to me, and I'm going to be pro-choice. As I've gotten older and more conservative and more discerning, I still, because I'm really a libertarian, so I feel like people need to make their own choices, like informed choice. But to me, I'm like, what a gross form of birth control. To your point earlier, women are like, well, I don't need, it's not a, sex is no longer withheld from men. So I can just have lots of sex. If I get pregnant, no big deal, I'll just have an abortion. And to me, it's
like. And by the way, that's a majority of abortions. When they say rape, incest,
it's not.
It is less than 1%. And it's like, less than 1%. And then, sorry, I want to be clear, because they're also calling an ectopic pregnancy an abortion. And so they say, so if you have a miscarriage, doctors won't allow you they won't allow you to abort the baby in some state. I go, because that's not an abortion. That's not an abortion. An abortion is pulling. I want people to be very clear and see a video of an abortion. An abortion is going in with clamps. This is one way. The other way is drugs to induce kind of premature labor. But one way is the doctor goes into the uterus with clamps and starts to pull apart the baby by its limbs.
Yep. Yeah. And my point earlier was, I arrived at, you know, what a gross form of birth control. Like, there's a lot of ways to keep from having a baby that don't involve killing something that's starting to grow in you, right? A life, a baby. So I've come 180 on it, where I'm like, look, but I'm not like, you know, no women should ever be allowed. I feel like women have to arrive at this on their own. Like, look, you introduced pro-choice, right? So choose.
No. Yeah, let me challenge you on that, though. So if we're talking about the union
about the
of
men
and women, why should women make this decision? It took two to get that baby there. Why is the men not an important? That's because you have now gone down the road of destroying life. Everything the left does, and I hate to say the left, but far, because I don't think people are aware, is destructive.
The far left. I get
it. It is not life affirming, from gender affirming care, that is not life affirming, to abortion, that is not life affirming, to the people that are pro Hamas, who just indiscriminately slaughtered babies. And I mean, it is, nothing they do is life affirming. And when you're in, because I was so deep in those values, and I look back on my own life, no wonder I was depressed all the time. There was nothing life affirming about it. Now, I didn't understand that at the time, but I struggled with depression. I struggled with anxiety. Because it's the party of destruction.
You always
have to destroy something.
Did I see somewhere where there was one or two states that were really starting to advocate for the men who got the woman pregnant, where you can't, I saw, it's probably going to be one of the most conservative states that's doing it, one of the most pro-life states. I thought I saw something like, oh, that's interesting. They're starting to not just completely disregard the men's voice when it's like, you know, wait a minute, I don't want to abort this baby. Why is she get to just kill it? You know? And so I think you're seeing some of that. It's few and far between.
Yeah, Planned Parenthood is everywhere. Now you can just order a pill, right? And this is the thing with women. They've been brainwashed to bring it for a full circle and pull a Trump, like a weave, you know?
Yeah.
But you wonder why women vote liberal and men voted more conservatively is because we have demoralized men to the point where they feel they don't matter. Right. And And I'm not saying we go back to the days where women are considered property of their man. This is not about retroactivating kind of this old 50s notion of, like, I said this in my piece, like, I certainly don't expect to, like, have my husband come home and me in heels and red lipstick with pearls and a drink. And here's, honey, here's your martini. But that's not, we're not talking about that. We're actually talking about, I think, conservatives, true progress. And true progress is kind of the equal opportunity for women. I don't see anymore where women are oppressed, where women are not allowed in the colleges and universities. And actually, they are excelling above men. So enough of this. We now need to progress from what may have been, quote unquote, a patriarchy to what I now see in the past two decades, which is the matriarchy and the over-feminization of society, to union. We each have unique roles. We each bring something to the table. And when we submit, this is what Ephesians is all about in the Bible. Mm-hmm. When we submit to the unique characteristics that God has given us, when we embrace those, when we cultivate those, then we will have a society that is not only equal, but unified and loving, instead of this constant power struggle.
Right. You know what? I want to be like, not to let men off the hook completely on abortion, because here's part of it too. I remember one of my girlfriends got an abortion when I was young. And I remember being massively relieved because I did not feel ready. When my wife got pregnant, I was like, oh my God, this is going to change everything.
Tony, I haven't met any man that says he's ready for a baby.
No, and so
that's what matures a man.
Well, let me finish. Exactly. I agree with you. So there is, the men are going along with it, not because they feel disempowered that they don't have a say. They secretly don't want to make the decision. And when it's made for them and it's like, I'm not having a baby, they're massively relieved because, like, oh my God, I had so much I wanted to do before becoming a father. And I don't even know if I want to be with this woman. I've only known her for 5 months. Like, I don't know if she doesn't seem like the one. We did it a bunch and now she's pregnant. And right. So I think there's a part too where men don't want to grow up, and you see it, you know. I mean, I was married for a long time before we had our son. And I think there's a part where you're just always hoping, as a man, you're always hoping you're going to make a little more money and get a little bit more settled. But it God doesn't always work that way. Sometimes, like, you're having a kid and it's now. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on that men go along with it because they don't want to cross that initiation into mature masculinity, which fatherhood will thrust upon you.
Forces. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know who does a great job of talking about the unexpected joys when you're not ready for it, of parenthood and country music. There's at least 10 songs I could rip off the top of my head.
Oh yeah.
The one, one drink leads into and now we got this baby. We weren't ready for it because they got drunk and had babies. I get it. Not every story is going to have that kind of happy ending, but to I'm sorry, murder a life because you aren't ready. Well, maybe you should have thought of that, you know, before you had sex.
I know exactly. Well, so I know you're really into health. Is there on the national scene? So I know a lot of people that are health experts, or they've got their sleeves rolled up and they really want to take good care of themselves. Like, health is a huge priority for a lot of people in my circles. And, you know, is there anything that you haven't seen coming yet that you're hoping you will see out of the Make America Healthy movement and Kennedy and all of that? Is there something that you're like, I really want that to happen, because I think that truth or that, you know, reveal or those, you know, new laws or whatever. I see that Kennedy just banned a whole bunch of food additives, and I'm like, okay, well, that's a start. But is there something that you want to see that you're like, I'm waiting for that, and that's going to be great news for people all over the place?
No, I actually don't think there's a silver bullet. So, you know, one of the gifts of having my sanity restored through my faith and through my process of getting my master's in public policy is I'm much more pragmatic. And you know, these ideals of a world where there's no food additives and everybody lives off the food that the farmers grow down the street, it's just not it's not possible. We have cities, and we need to have cities, right? Not everybody can be rural. Personally, I moved out to a place that is surrounded by farms. I walk into my little local restaurant that also sells eggs from the farm down the road and cheese. So I am happy as a clam. I like this lifestyle.
Sure.
But we're not getting rid of big agra or most likely industrial farming. We can move away from it. We can start to restructure incentives that don't unfairly benefit those companies because those companies are heavily subsidized. So we can start maybe to incentivize smaller farmers to move towards regenerative agriculture. I don't think there's one policy, and I am very cautious about the overextension of government and just starting to ban things. Ultimately, real change only happens when people decide for themselves to make the change. We've seen it with the left. When you force it upon people, it doesn't work. You can't force people to change language into pronouns, he, her, they, them. It's not going to work. You will have a revolt. So it really needs to be a grassroots effort. And we see that happening, which is wonderful. So when Kennedy does go to make a move, he's got popular support to do it.
Sure.
Vaccines are certainly not there yet. I think we need to stay as far away from those as possible right now. He can continue to foster good research on it, right? To change the narrative. What we need, like he said, is transparency, accountability. I just don't think there's one silver bullet. I think the biggest benefit of what we've seen in a very short amount of time, no one was talking about this stuff a year ago, even, except for me. I'd like to say I did my policy paper and I titled it Make America Healthy Again.
Did you happen to read Turtles All the Way Down, the book?
No. Why does that sound familiar, though?
Because it's a very famous book, and it was published by two scientists, Israeli scientists, anonymously, with all of these studies about vaccines that were never suppressed, and they did it anonymously because they were like, it's not about us personally, it's about, and there was a challenge, like, I challenge any scientist, data scientist, or medical doctor to take a look at this and not come to the exact same conclusion, because it's impossible. So for me, the Make America Healthy Again, I want to see Turtles All the Way Down become where it's passed around, required reading for every medical doctor. And I think they're going to tie autism, the massive spike in autism, all the learning stuff, they're going to tie it to vaccines, because the evidence is slam dunk there. They just haven't shown everybody yet, but it's already been researched. So for me, it's not a silver bullet. It's just, well, if you're going to be transparent, Robert Kennedy, why don't you start with the transparent study that's the gold standard right now that everybody's talking about, and have that side by side with Big Pharma's faulty science around there's no problem with these vaccines, and let people decide for themselves. Because if you're going to be the administration of transparency, then you have to be transparent on something. And there's going to be pissed off parents when they learn the truth about this. They are going to be so mad. I have parents that have, you know, kids with Asperger's and autism, and, you know, their whole lives are about that. And when they find out what is really going on, they're going to be freaking pissed off about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt it, right? I'm not saying I haven't read that, but I know that you say it. I think a colleague of mine has mentioned to it, and that may have been the rabbit hole that sent him down the vaccine investigation to leading to the conclusions that he's led to. However, again, there's the truth, and then there's the reality of what you're dealing with in politics. And Big Pharma is going to do everything. I mean, we saw Dave Weldon's confirmation got yanked. His appointment got yanked because rumor has it that that the pharmaceutical companies got to Cassidy in Louisiana, and to, I don't think it was Murkowski, but Collins, you know, and you need that Republican support. It's just, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying the reality of it is, I think right now MAHA needs to take the easy wins and and prove, you know, earn the trust back of the American people, because it really comes down to that.
Yeah.
They've done such a good job of painting Kennedy as a kook, right? And so people have to trust him first. I've got even conservative friends that are like, the measles, you know, now it's the measles. And so they're hyping that up, and he wants to pull vaccines when there's plenty of research. I just wrote a piece on it in the Kennedy Beacon about the flaws of the MMR vaccine studies and their safety. Same thing. There were two guys that came out that researched it and said there's probable cause. This is causing brain issues. I'd have to go back to the article and tell you what it was. And their licenses got pulled. When you're talking about a man with the family, you know, he's like, you know, I guess I'm just going to shut up and sit down. So that is the reality of it. And I think right now we can, there's enough skepticism in processed foods. There's enough skepticism about the food pyramid, that those are going to be the first lines of attack, you know. And it's, he doesn't have a long period of time. Trump has given him 90 days to assess it, and then I think 100 and some days to make a plan. And so you've got people working very hard behind the scenes to try to get this stuff to Kennedy, and like a bullet, a point, but it's got to be very streamlined. It's got to be precise and time efficient. And vaccines is just not going to be time efficient, right? So
yeah, he has.
It's going to take a long time.
He has read Turtles All the Way Down. I know he has. So
oh, I'm sure.
It'll be very interesting. Well. Let's see. I wanted to give you a chance. Where can people find you and find your work? Is there any creative stuff you'd like our listeners to know about? I just really enjoyed this conversation and the direction we're going. Where can people find you, and what do you got going on?
Yes. Right now I'm writing. I'm a staff writer for the Kennedy Beacon, which is the media outlet of the American Values PAC. Which was a big funder of Kennedy's campaign when he went when he ran for president. Now we're just kind of busy getting information out about Kennedy, you know, getting information out when things happen in HHS. So I'm reporting on the confirmation hearings. Like I said, I did a report on the bird flu, and that's tied into the MMR vaccines. You'll see. I think that was the. I don't know. It's all blurring together. I continue to write op-ed pieces for The Federalist, The American Spectator, that piece that you mentioned, Why I Left the Left, kind of that was my initial coming out in the Epoch Times. I ended up being a health reporter for them for the past year. So I've got some just strictly health pieces, a lot on, at that point I was focusing a lot on women's health, real women's health, not reproductive care. Real reproductive care is understanding your biological monthly cycle and how to manage your sexual activity within that. But also I wrote a lot about hormones, menopause, perimenopause, that kind of thing. Metabolic health, all of these new words that are coming out, right? In this new idea of health. I'm working on a piece now about the new language of health. You've got to introduce people to a whole new set of definitions and words. Chronic inflammation, metabolic health, natural immunity. All we're used to hearing is symptom, drug, symptom, drug, symptom, drug, instead of root cause kind of language. So I'm writing a piece on that about, you know, people are going to have to get used to a whole new language of health. And I think that's another task ahead of us, right?
Yeah.
So that's where you can be. You can always just go to my website, jennifergallardi.com. It'll lead you to some different places there, which I need to revamp because my career is shifting daily.
I like your website. It's nice.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
Thanks.
it's got some good stuff on there. It's easily navigatable. It's just, yeah, I really think you did a good job on that. So that's a nice home
I
for you to.
appreciate it because it was me.
Yeah, no, you did a great job. I
Thank
was like, oh yeah, this looks good. This is organized. I can find my way around. A
you.
lot of good links and stuff like that. So, well, Jennifer, thanks for coming on the show. It's so good to chat with you and finally connect with you. Come back anytime as this continues to unfold. Go read Turtles All the Way Down. We'll do an episode about
I
that. No.
will. Yeah. Anytime you want to do a deep dive into something, I'd love to do it.
That sounds great. Thanks so much, Jennifer.
My pleasure, Tony.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. To find Jennifer's work and writing, simply go to www.jennifergallardi.com. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.